views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hey everybody, this is Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture, change, and leadership, helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. I am so excited about today's guest, JP LaCour, who is the chief connector of a company called Brand Foundations. And JP and I know each other through our work with a great assessment group called Culture Talk, and he and I will chat about that a little bit later. But first, let me tell you a little bit about JP and about Brand Foundations. His company helps organizations unlock the value of their two biggest intangible assets, brand and culture. And we'll be exploring that more during today's show, especially for folks who haven't really had a lot of experience or exposure with the connection between brand and culture and how much they really influence and impact each other. So Brand Foundations also works a lot with private equity sponsors and purpose-driven CEOs, companies that are looking to merge, transform, or pivot, you know, going through a lot of change, especially as a result of mergers and acquisitions. JP himself has spent his career creating understanding and connections between people and brands, buyers and sellers, and companies and employees, which I love. And he started his career at MCI, marketing some of the world's very first internet services, and really saw firsthand how a powerful brand and a truly committed culture could disrupt a 100-year-old monopoly and change the world. So he's, over the next 20 years, he held senior tech industry marketing positions and founded a series of brand and marketing agencies and has continued to hone his skills. And JP, I'm so excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you, Claudette. It's great to be here.
Yeah. I know we had a lot of fun a couple of months ago, right? At a conference we were at.
A couple of weeks ago, right?
A couple weeks ago. Well, time flies. So one of the things, you know, I wanted to ask you is to share with us really what is this connection between brand and culture for folks who haven't thought about it that way before?
Right. So brand is, you know, I look at these are intangible assets, right? That's the first thing when you're talking to CEOs, to CFOs, to those who have the decision, you know, the decision makers and have access to the purse strings, so to speak. It helps to think of these things in terms of their financial value. And that's how we look at it. And that's how we've kind of built the practice and talk about brand and culture today, that these are really the two of the most valuable things that any enterprise has, that any organization has, and especially if they're for profit. And one of the metrics that we talk about to sort of illustrate that is this, the idea that most of what companies are sold for today, or at least a very large percentage of it, goes to goodwill. There was a Deloitte study done a couple years ago that looked at the percentage of purchase price that was allocated to goodwill when a company is acquired. And on average across, I don't know, 14 different industries, it's on average, right, 50%. So 50% of what a company is worth goes to goodwill. It doesn't even include intellectual property, which in the tech space is a big piece of it as well. So right there, you know, what is goodwill? It's all of the other assets of an intellectual property that are not physical, that don't make up the company, right? It's your brand and your culture. It's these things that you can't touch and feel. And so I think they're inextricably linked. I think that the perception people have of a company, of its brand, is very much backed up by the culture. Most businesses today, at least in the United States, are service businesses. There's less and less manufacturing businesses. So it's not about a product. It's about a service, and that service is inevitably delivered by people. And even when you have a product business like, you know, let's say Apple, there's a heavy service component. So, you know, I look at the link as extremely strong, incredibly valuable between the two, and something that unfortunately business leaders don't pay enough attention to, and largely because they're intangible and they can't measure it, can't touch it. It's hard to get your hands around it, right? As you and I know from the culture side. So,
yeah.
And it's the same thing on brand. You know, a lot of people think of brand as just being a logo, and it's much more than that. So I think they're inextricably linked, and that's part of what drives us is getting people to see that. And it differentiates us too. So it's most agencies kind of just talk about the creative stuff on around the brand side. I think it lives more on the, inside the people.
Mm-hmm. I would love that. The brand lives more inside the people, right?
Yeah.
So it becomes really part of the culture.
It becomes part of the culture, it becomes part of the employer brand. It's how you hire, recruit, right? All of those things.
Yeah. And one of the things, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, but a time when you've gone, I mean, I'm sure you have hundreds of examples, but you've gone into an organization, you've done this powerful brand story, right? And you, that work that you've done has really helped transform the culture, you know, or brought people together in a different way about why they exist as an organization. Is there an example you can share with us?
I think that an organization we worked with, I can't drop the name, but a large IT organization that was publicly traded, that had been operating in a hardware space for a long time and really wanted to pivot to being a software provider to get out of a low margin commodity business. And they had made an acquisition of somebody in that space, and we came in and took them through our process, which touched on both brand and culture, obviously. But at the end of the day, what we found was that the story, well, after they had done this integration, that really what defined them in the marketplace, and what we heard from customers and what we heard from employees, was not about the technology. It was about the ability to build relationships. It was something very human. Mm-hmm. And we really teased that out and built the brand around that. And also then spent a lot of time kind of socializing that within the company. We made that part of how they talked about things internally. And that had a pretty tremendous effect. Outwardly, you know, it's we didn't unfortunately get a chance to measure a lot of culture stuff internally. Mm-hmm. Related to that, I would have loved to, but we didn't have that that partnership in that particular engagement with HR to do that. But what we did see on the outside was that partners responded to it with a lot of passion, and the employees did rally around behind that. And you know, you saw sales numbers go up tremendously, and it the stock went up over the next 18 months. Quite dramatically, and enabled them, you know, like a 6x increase, and allowed them to, it was one of the things that helped them go out and make acquisitions of other providers in that space. So, you know, I think what that speaks to is that when you get the brand right and it reflects the culture, you still have to do good culture work to bring, especially in an M&A environment, to bring all those people together. But it can have a very strong outward effect, and it can have a very strong bottom line effect, right? Which is that the performance of the company improves. And I think that's in large part to the measure of the people and how energized they are and how engaged they are. And you know, one of the challenges that we face in this practice, and we were relatively, you know, we were sort of pioneers when we kind of came up with this model in 2012. You didn't have a lot of brand agencies talking about things like culture, 2010, 2011, and then eventually 2012 when we kind of pivoted to this model. And my partner and I are not, we don't have organizational development background. So we're brand guys. And so, you know, we've had to learn and partner with people like yourselves to really understand the dynamics of the culture and, you know, build a brand that reflects that culture, but then also see this great opportunity to take that brand and that platform that we build and that meaning and that sense of purpose and story and help drive it back into the culture to keep them honest to it and keep them living the brand and not just talking about the brand. But it requires a lot of work, and it's a very different discipline. And as you know, it's an amorphous thing. It's hard to measure. It's hard to get your hands around. And so there's still a lot to be done there. You know, this is an imperfect science, and no two companies have the same culture, as you know, and we're always interested in frameworks like yours to be able to understand, you know, how to do this better. So it takes a lot of time, a lot of attention, and a lot of experimentation, I think, ultimately.
I think it does too. And thank you for sharing that example. I love how, you know, once, you know, when I was listening to it, what struck me was how much people in organizations really want to understand who they are as a culture, right? They want to understand that collective experience. Mm-hmm. And like you said, when you were able, like in your example, you're able to actually bring it to life, capture it, right? Get the essence of it.
Get them to see it, right? In a way.
Yeah, get them to see it because it's so much, they're in it all day long, right? Yeah. They're in the soup of the culture. And as you said, right, I always think of culture as a fingerprint. No two are alike. So you're not, you know, you can't just replicate Google or whatever. And
that's actually one of the things that makes it so powerful from a brand standpoint is, you know, we deal with a lot of business to business technology companies, and they're very, you know, they're often run by engineers, and they're very down, they're, you know, they see their identity and the and their brand as being about the product or the service or some, you know, feature of it or some element of the technology. But in reality, it's bigger than that. It's about the people and the culture is the, you know, somebody can mimic the technology, you know, the cost of barrier to entry to get into this stuff is getting lower and lower now. And so you may have a technical head start, but in 18 months, you probably won't. Mm-hmm. And the only thing you really have, I believe, that is truly unique is going to be your culture, right? Somebody else can mimic your technology. They can mimic your messaging. They can mimic your, you know, your product. Your ability to support, you know, to build customer support, but they don't have your people, and nobody else will have your people, and they won't have your culture. And so that is a huge competitive advantage if you can figure out how to leverage it.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It is, like you said, this incredible, you know, differentiator. It makes all the difference. It's the one, and it's such, you know, it's such a cool time to be working in this, in the culture space, right? Mm-hmm. When all this is really starting, the light's being shown on what, you know, what's really happening in organizations, and how the culture can transform them, right? And almost overnight when you start hitting it, you get your finger on the pulse of how the culture is working. So we're going to take a quick break. You are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. When we come back, we're going to talk with JP about a model that he and his business partner developed, how it went viral, and what they're doing with it now. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to branch out, to take a leap of faith, to love yourself and others fully? Then it is time to let go of what no longer serves you and take action to live the life you love and deserve. Hi, I'm Erica Gifford Mills of Get Rooted Radio and creator of the Rooted Life Virtual Group Coaching Series. Join me for this 12-week experience that will equip, empower, and enlighten you to live it up, love it up, and let it go. This series includes weekly group and individual coaching sessions, accountability, words of encouragement, tips and techniques to achieving your personal and professional goals. The next Rooted Life 12-week session begins August 27th. The group coaching calls will be Tuesday evenings, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. To sign up or to schedule your free Empower Hour, visit my website, getrootedradio.com, and click on the Rooted Life tab at the top. I look forward to walking alongside you on this journey. But don't delay, space is limited. Again, the next session begins August 27th. Go to getrootedradio.com to sign up today.
Are you new to playing with the law of attraction or a seasoned pro looking for an easy and organized way to monitor your co-creation endeavors as you draw them from the immaterial planes into your physical reality? Then join me over at goldenotter.us for bi-monthly new and full moon rituals where we plant seeds of intention, then harvest the fruits of our desires as part of a dynamic community in the members-only Lunar Manifestations Forum. I'm Autumn Seibel, host of Golden Otter Radio, where the metaphysical meets the mainstream, and I can't wait to meet you.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy L., on the Tracy L. Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at TracyLClark.com.
Hey, everybody, we're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. And for those of you just joining us, my guest today is JP LeCur, who is the chief connector of a company called Brand Foundations. And we are talking about the intersection between brand and culture and how powerful brand stories and really getting that pulse of the culture can transform and energize an organization. JP, right before the break, we were just starting to talk about, or we had just been talking about, right, you know, how culture is this great differentiator, right? You know, it's we're hitting a time in history where we can really talk about that and work with it.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it brought to mind, I talk a lot about with when I do public speaking and when I talk to clients that I think we are at a, I'd like to think we're at a turning point, right, where there's enough of a critical mass of people in the workforce now that care about culture, right? We have a millennial generation, Gen Z now that are, you know, I don't know exactly, there's all sorts of stats, but, you know, within the next five years will be, what, 80% of the workforce. And I'd like to think that while culture has been around for a while and talked about for a while, that maybe now we're finally on the cusp of it becoming something that business leaders, especially as those generations begin to run businesses, will really, really take seriously. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, what have you experienced in your, do you think that we're at that truly at that turning point where we're going to hit some kind of a critical mass?
You know, I think we're getting really close. And, you know, I think in part because we are, you know, we're talking about something. And as you were saying, you know, you and your partner developed your model, right, just a few years ago. Right. Something that we couldn't have really been having this conversation 10 years ago, right? Even maybe 7 or 8. We probably wouldn't have. We would have talked about it differently. You might not have developed your model. So we see, like, you know, culture can be part of what we talk about. We know there are, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of books written on it now that people are buying. And so I think the other key piece is one of the things you mentioned, which is that we have these younger generations of folks who really aren't going to put up with working in a bad culture.
Right.
I mean, I think respected.
The compact, it was broken of
yeah.
I go to work for a company for 20 years. I mean, even when my father was and was a very successful executive, he looked at, you know, and when I began my career in 1990, it was sort of looked at like, well, you have to spend 5 or 7 years at a company. I mean, I was moving within 2 or 3 years right away. And I remember having that conversation with him where he thought that that was, you know, are you sure that's okay? And I'm like, no, I think that's really kind of the way things are going to be like now. And that's there won't be as much of a stigma around that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that compact was broken, that I'm not just going to work for a company for 30 years and hope that I get the golden parachute at the end, because invariably that wasn't happening, right? In the 80s and then in the 90s, you started to see that change. And I think this generation grew up, you know, if you're under 30 probably or 35, you grew up, you know, in either through or in the wake of the you know, the Great Recession, and which only doubled down on that challenge. So that's, I've got to believe that those folks, as they get into leadership roles, will realize that this is, business needs to be about more than just, you know, profit, and and that, you know, culture, they're not just going to settle for a culture. They're going to gravitate towards one that they believe in and a purpose, you know, the company has a purpose that they believe in.
And I think the other thing that's changed too, just along those lines, is I think people, when cultural work used to be done, right, because there's certainly been people who've been doing it for decades,
right,
it was done so the company became more profitable, right? Mm-hmm. And now we do it differently, right? We're looking at the essence of the culture. We're looking at how, like, purpose, how we're bringing people together. What are people's experiences of being there?
So, right. That's another thing that it's sort of a pet peeve of mine and has been for a couple of years, which is that, why does HR report up to the CFO?
That drives me crazy too.
Because it's the biggest expense in any business, right?
Right, right.
But then automatically you then look at it as a cost to be contained and not as something to be invested in, like marketing or systems or product or, you know, innovation, right? And that is, I wrote a blog post a couple of years ago about just sort of break down the wall between marketing and HR, and that you know, they should be, I actually think HR should probably report up to the CMO. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, there should be at least a really, really strong partnership there. The CMO is also becoming, let's face it, HR doesn't get a lot of, as much budget and attention and focus. And it's a lot of cases, some of the basic functions are being outsourced, anyway. And so it's lost influence in some cases. And meanwhile, the CMO is now often involved in a lot more digital and technology related stuff, and is accruing more influence in IT and in the C-suite, and is getting more budget, and is becoming a more complex job, and is touching more parts of the business. Right, the CMO owns the website. The website affects every part of the business, and so it makes sense, I think, for HR leaders to have a really strong partnership with the CMO and with marketing, and to work more closely together. And the brand is going to affect, the employer brand, right? The recruiting, their ability to bring in the best people and to keep the best people. And that's a communication. Often that's a communications thing, which marketing should be an expert in. And so, yeah, for a lot of reasons, I've never understood why more companies don't have that marketing and HR leader together, or reporting to one another, or under the same roof. And some, I keep a short list of people that I know that actually have that title of running marketing HR. There's probably less than five people on that list, mm-hmm. I know of in my career, but just seems to me it would make a lot more sense.
Yeah, I agree, because without, as we know, without the people, you don't have a business. So
exactly.
And I'm even a fan of, you have that chief people officer, or whatever title you want to give that role. Right. And that they're on par with everybody else on that executive team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Brings that level executive, C-suite sort of, attention to it. Right. As opposed to just under the CFO. Right.
Right. Yeah. 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 Absolutely. So, one of the things I've been fortunate to see is a very short presentation on your purpose, way, and impact model. And I think it would be great for you to share that with listeners. What? And there's a great story behind it too that I love. Yeah. So what's the story?
Absolutely. So a couple years ago, my partner and I set out to do some more content marketing. A lot of our business is driven by referral, but we figured we need to be pressing more on the thought leadership area. We need to be blogging. We need to be regularly producing content. And so part of my role in that effort was to write a blog post every couple of weeks. And we had an editorial calendar of topics that we would cover. And I opened it up one Saturday morning. I would usually take my daughter to a volunteer job that she had on Saturday mornings. And I'd sit in the coffee shop, and that's when I would do my blog post. And so I opened the editorial calendar one morning, and the topic I was supposed to cover was mission, vision, and values. And so being a brand guy and somebody attuned to HR and culture, I recognized, okay, these are really important statements, mission, vision, values. They are probably among the most important things a company can put in writing, and they'll affect everything from the culture to the brand, to the behavior of people. And so this will be a great topic to write about. And the first thing I did was I thought to myself, what's the difference between vision and mission again? And I Googled it, and I got back 100 million documents related to this, 100 million articles in the Google index. And that was my first thought, that this is a problem, right? This is something's not right here. And there was no common definition for it. Everybody has a different take on it. And then I began to research, brands that I really respected, great brands that had not only a great brand story, but had a fabulous culture behind it as well. An example being a FedEx. And I was finding their mission statements online, and they were, the kinds of things that you expect to see nowadays. They're all about, shareholder value, and, we have to, operate with integrity and blah, blah, blah. And you just kind of tuned out, and none of it was inspiring. And then I was finding things like mission statement generators online that were, mm-hmm. I think, jokes, but they were bumping out mission statements that you could have attributed to any company. And half the companies that, mission statements I were reading were from companies that were, they could have applied to any company. And I said to myself right there, I'm not going to write another article about how to write a mission vision statement or, how to do a better job of it. I'm going to declare the entire thing dead. And so that was the article that I wrote. It was mission, vision, values are dead. And, we looked at why we thought it wasn't effective anymore for the reasons we just sort of described. It's not very differentiating. It's not very motivational. Everybody, something like 99% of the Fortune 500 have integrity as a core value. And I sort of figured that's table stakes, right? We're in business.
Oh yeah.
built on the expectation of a fair trade of goods and services for monetary value. You know, if I have to tell you I'm not going to cheat you, then I don't want to, you know, you don't want to do business with me.
You have a problem. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so it's not differentiating. People don't understand the difference between mission and vision. There's no common definition. You know, this thing first showed up in business school curriculums in the 1960s, and it perfectly captured the, I think, spirit of a post-World War II generation, right, that had just won World War II, and, you know, man in the gray flannel suit kind of taking the train in New York City every day or whatever, working on Madison Avenue, but not so much today's millennial and Gen Z, you know, very purpose-driven generation. And for all those reasons, and there's no context either. Like, how do I tell a story around mission, vision, values that anybody can understand? That context of how they relate to one another was lacking. And so what we proposed as an alternative was a framework that we call purpose, way, and impact. And what the defining attribute of it was that it was three stages of a rocket. And that gave it the context needed to tell a story. And so the first stage is the purpose statement. And that is, why does the company exist beyond making money? And it's usually rooted in a sense of change, something that you needed to change. It's usually the origin story. It's grounded in the origin story of a lot of companies. A lot of founders will have that story. They just couldn't accept something anymore. And so that's why they changed their business and did this thing. The way statement is going to then be the next stage of the rocket, because the purpose statement kind of gets you off the ground. And that is all about, what are the one or two attributes that are going to take you into orbit? Not all your core values, just the one or two that are most important. And then the third will be the impact statement. And it's kind of like the third stage of the rocket. If I get into orbit rather than a mission statement, which tends to be very inwardly focused, you know, or a vision statement, you know, we intend to be the best company at blah, 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 blah. An impact statement is about getting into orbit, looking down at the rest of the world. You've achieved that purpose that you set out. And how did it change everybody else's lives? How did it make a difference in their lives? And so it became a very simple and easy framework to remember, grounded in some very basic ways to communicate it. It doesn't necessarily replace mission, vision, values, but I think it can in a lot of companies, especially earlier stage. Mm-hmm. And people responded, and it's been read, shared, and liked on LinkedIn about 100,000 times at this point. So it was great success that caught us off guard, but we live it today and practice it with a lot of our clients.
Yeah, I love the model. I think it's so. I agree. Mission and vision, particularly, right?
They can be done well, but
it can be done well, and I think it's part of a larger larger process, right? You know, how are we behaviorally going to define our values? How do we see them in action, right? What's the vision in terms of where we're going? But I think it's part of a larger process versus having it right. We'll plaster it on the website and we're all set.
Okay, exactly. Yeah. And then it doesn't get used. It's not lived. So
it's not lived. It's
how
not
you
lived.
Create these is as important as the statements themselves. You have to do that the right way as well.
Yeah. That's something I talk a lot about too, is the process is almost as important as the outcome. Yeah, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're gonna talk a little bit about more purpose, way, and impact, and why process matters so much in culture work and brand work. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you're listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to create a life you'll really love? Then you'll want to tune in to the hit show Life Design Radio, From Adversity to Awesome with Susan DiLorenzo, live each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. No matter where you are in your adversity story, Life Design Radio has got you covered. Get ready to feel inspired, enlightened, and motivated. For more information about working with Susan, visit SusanDiLorenzo.com.
Learn to live in the light and unveil the authentic you with A Time of Healing Radio with me, Felice Diana, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in every third Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific as I help listeners understand sacred fusion energy and how to connect to the spirit that fuels the very life we live. Explore the journey of spiritual transcendence and ultimately discover the path to peace, love, purpose, and wholeness. For more information, visit atimeofhealing.com.
Dream on, fly high, and live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Laura Meeks guides you in finding your unique gifts and bringing them to life. As a certified life coach, speaker, and veteran bomber pilot for the U.S. Air Force, Laura knows how to follow a dream. She is ready to support you so you can dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. For more information on Laura and her work, visit flyhighliving.com.
People often ask, what does it mean to thrive? On Thrive by Gen Radio, it means body confidence, mind fulfillment, and soul synchronicity. Create synchronicity with God and learn as Jen shares action steps and real stories that will inspire you to be unstoppable in fulfilling your purpose. Tune in live each Monday at 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com and visit JenniferZellup.com to thrive with Jen.
Has your buzz for life buzzed off? Feeling ignored, invisible, and wondering if this is really all there is? The years go by faster as we gain momentum. You're halfway there. Are you gathering speed or puttering out? Hit your stride for the liberating half of life. Comfortable in your skin? You can do better than that. Tune in to Discovering You Again Radio every fourth Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific as host Susan Axelrod encourages listeners to decide what they want, get inspired to action, and face challenges head on. Host Susan Axelrod pulls no punches, encouraging you to grab the brass ring and soar. For more information about Susan, go to www.whatwillyourlegacybe.com.
Back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, here with my guest today, JP LeCour, who is the chief connector, with a company called Brand Foundations. And we have been talking a lot about culture and brand and the intersection. And JP, I love your work. I love the purpose, way, and impact model. It is, you know, I remember the first time that I heard you talk about it in June, and it just really struck me as, oh my gosh, this is incredibly smart, incredibly impactful, and I can see why it really works in companies. Yeah. And the, you know, right before we went to the break, you mentioned, we both said how important process is, right? The process of doing this kind of work matters so tremendously. Yeah. And what's your take on that in terms of, you know, best practices in the process?
Right. So the work that Brand Foundations does when we engage with a client is nominally a brand messaging storytelling exercise with a deep culture dive behind it. And so our philosophy here is that the brand needs to reflect the culture as part of what makes it different and unique, and then can be fed back into the culture so that the company continues to stay on brand, right, in their behavioral, in the way they behave. And so if you're going to create a brand that's going to reflect that culture, you need to do that culture work. You need to go into it. Now, that's a little different than changing the culture, shifting the culture, right? Our work sort of takes a snapshot of what it is and tries to incorporate that into a story. And then we hope that there's an opportunity to follow that up with more work to extend that culture, to build on it, to find more places to communicate what's great about it. But it does... you know, it is a snapshot in time, right? And in order to do that, we have to have some visibility into it. And so we believe that the process of creating this sort of brand and culture narrative has to be inclusive. It has to touch everybody. And so whether that's a couple dozen employees or a couple thousand, everybody needs to have touched this in some way, shape, or form. The traditional rebranding approach, if you will, is often one where an agency comes in, maybe interviews a few people, goes offsite with the leadership team, and you know, perhaps comes back with, hey, here's your mission, vision, values, or here's your brand promise. And in a lot of cases, the wider employee base didn't get a chance to have their voice heard in that. Mm-hmm. And so we feel really strongly that it needs to be inclusive. And so our process is kind of a 360. We not only will, of course, interview and speak with leaders, in the organization. We'll do workshops, maybe with a subset of people, or brand articulation workshop. But then we also will do surveys across the entire company. We want to understand the culture, and we want to know what people think about the brand, and we want everybody to have a chance to chime in on it, because then that makes them more likely to buy into it and believe in it and embrace it. And it makes for a stronger culture anyway, because they had a voice in it. And ultimately, I think it becomes, they see themselves reflected in it, and it makes for a more powerful brand. They're more likely to act in a way that's in alignment with it, that's in resonance with it. Customers will sense that. It'll spread to family members, you know, anybody that an employee interacts with. And so from a process standpoint, I think it needs to be inclusive. It can't be top down or leadership only. And in quite the opposite, there's a little element of, and there's, we have process around this and how we facilitate our engagements as well, that leadership is letting go a little bit. You know, they're heard, but there is a distinct communications stream or component to our projects and our engagements where leadership is making clear to the rest of the company that this is, you know, we want to know what you think. You are the brand. We can stand up here and talk to a blue in the face, but ultimately, you know, as leaders, but ultimately you as the rest of the company and employees and partners need to deliver on that, right? We can't make that happen. You have to embrace it. You have to live it. And so for that reason, we really push hard on that. And we make sure that from a process standpoint, that's communicated, that employees recognize they have a really big voice at stake in this brand, and that, that they need to own it.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. It makes a huge difference. I do something very similar in terms of the level of inclusivity, right? And having people from every part of the organization, every level involved or represented. If it's too big to have everybody, because otherwise, you're just going to, you have missing voices. You can't get the 360.
Right.
You can't, even as a practitioner, you're going to be missing information, but you also get so much buy-in when people are participating and having a voice. I love it. I think it's such a fun process.
Yeah, better visibility and a better outcome, because people will follow it. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, because they've had a hand in creating it, really.
And everybody wants that, right? They all want to feel. They want to see the brand, you know, reflected in their, you know, in themselves, right? And themselves reflected in the brand. And that's where I think the culture talk stuff is so powerful as well.
Yeah, the culture talk. Well, yeah, culture talk is so powerful. And so when you describe culture talk, how do you describe it?
So I describe culture talk as a survey instrument that reveals the dominant archetypes or characters in the culture. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously rooted in Carl Jung's research from over 100 years ago, that theorized we all have within us as individuals these deeply seated characters that are almost genetically imprinted in us from tens of thousands of years of storytelling. Mm-hmm. And so we recognize them all. While you've seen them in advertising, you know, ever since the dawn of, you know, his work, an example being, you know, Budweiser, King of Beers as a ruler brand, or Mercedes, et cetera.
Yeah.
What you haven't seen is ways to identify it within the culture of organizations. And so culture talk is really the first instrument or tool that allows you to do that and to measure it. And so that's sort of how I describe it. And we were drawn to it in particular because while we have always done surveys as part of our brand work, surveys around the culture, what I really liked about the archetypes was that they tapped into something that was visceral, that people innately understand when they're exposed to the archetypes. They recognize them right away. And they can't unsee it, right? Mm-hmm. So it brings to life culture in a way that I think is incredibly powerful. And they all have a little bit of a narrative element to them.
Right.
And so it lends itself really well to bridging brand and culture together. So I can build a brand story that reflects some of the attributes of the dominant archetypes that I know almost every employee in the company is going to connect with in some way, shape, or form. So that's sort of how I describe it, and why we were drawn to it and love it as a tool.
Yeah, I love it too, and I often use culture talk in my my culture work, whether I'm helping to shift a culture, you know, assess a culture, we're helping with the culture evolve in a particular conscious and intentional way. But I love it also because it really helps people start to talk about their culture in a way that's not threatening.
Right.
And that is huge, right? Because most folks do not want to talk about their culture, the parts of the culture that aren't working, because they feel very vulnerable.
Right. Yeah. It gives you a framework to see the positive and negative attributes. And I think this is a big thing with leaders too, that and this is something that I'm trying to socialize more in the M&A space too, is that culture is a hard thing to get your hands around. People default in a lot of cases to just looking at core values. And as we've talked about, you know, those are often not truly differentiating and not really meaningful in a lot of cases. Leaders don't know, they don't have a way to get their hands around it and understand it. And so it does give you that framework. And in M&A, it's particularly important because, you know, the statistics show that 70 or 80% of most mergers and acquisitions don't return the value that investors had hoped. And invariably, it's because of people and culture. We know how to people go, whether you're M&A bankers or private equity guys or you're a strategic buyer. Everybody knows how to integrate products, technology, platform systems, the financials. Like, we spend all this money and time and effort integrating those things, but don't really have a good idea of how to integrate people. And so it's they default to, we have a good gut feel of the leadership team, it'll be fine. Or, yeah, they have the same core values. Look, we both have integrity as a core value, which, you know. And so they kind of gloss over it. And then what happens, you know, you get into it and a year and a half later, you have, you know, incredible silos of people, you have politics, you have resentment, you haven't created one system or one way of behaving and acting like you have in all these other systems that you've integrated. And so, you know, no surprise, it blows up and you see great people leave and it sets the company back and morale drops and then, you know, all of these things. And so I think Culture Talk is just a really simple way to, in an M&A environment, get not only understand what your company is before you go out and make an acquisition, but, you know, you could administer this to a company you're looking to acquire and get a snapshot of what are their dominant archetypes. And that's all you probably need, is just to have a good sense of, okay, this is kind of a quick shorthand on their culture. This is a quick shorthand on our culture, which you know from the archetypes. And then you know where they're going to mesh or where they're going to conflict. So I think it's a great, simple shorthand way. It's very intuitive to do things like that, M&A work or bringing teams together or whatever, you know, whatever it happens to be. It's very powerful in that regard.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really makes a difference that way. And like you said, it's very relatable, right? So folks who are listening, it's culturetalk.com to find out more information about the survey.
We're both certified partners. You can call us if you have questions.
yes. And we're both certified partners, right? So we are available for questions and help. Yes. And JP, I'm realizing I need to ask you, how can folks find your website, find out more about your work?
Sure. You can go to brandfoundations.us is our URL.
Okay. So everything,
you can email me at,
right there. Okay.
Yeah, everything's there. And you can email me at jp@brandfoundations.us as well. That's my
great
contact info.
Thank you. Yeah, nice and easy. Nice and
absolutely
easy. So something else I know you're really involved in that's also near and dear to my heart is conscious capitalism and that movement.
Yep.
Yeah. So how did you get involved with conscious capitalism? What's your story there?
So I originally approached the New York chapter about presenting on Purpose, Way, and Impact, because I chair the New York City chapter of Conscious Capitalism, and I had read the book, so I was familiar with the framework, and I was drawn to the idea that business could be a force for good, and I knew that there were chapters around the country, and so I originally approached them to do a presentation, and it turned into, why don't you help us do a whole series of events and join the board. So
I guess I like you.
Connection. Yeah. Well, I had some fun. I ran some good events and it tapped into a lot of this stuff. And I can talk more about how it aligns with the work that we do, the tenets of conscious capitalism too.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be great. And we're actually going to take a quick break. So when we come back, let's definitely dive into that. You were listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class Facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Are you feeling stuck in unhealthy habits, toxic relationships, or low self-esteem? Do you crave a healthy relationship filled with inspiration? You might just be on the verge of attracting your soulmate. Tune in each month to The Laura Richer Show, where dating coach Laura Richer and co-host matchmaker Peggy Bennett share tools for using your dating breakdown for a relationship breakthrough. For more information, visit richerhealinghypnosis.com.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Learn and explore fascinating and practical uses of essential oils, how to use them, and how they can enhance your everyday life. The Oil Lounge was founded by three remarkable women with fascinating stories about how essential oils changed their lives. Tina and Laura from The Karmic Path have joined forces to educate the masses in the benefits of Young Living essential oils. For more information, visit theoillounge.com.
This is Claudette Rowley, and we are back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm here with my guest, JP from Brown Foundations. And JP, for folks who are just tuning in, I want to make sure you have another opportunity to share how they can find out about you and your company.
Sure. They can go to brandfoundations.us is our website, www.brandfoundations.us, or you can email me at jp@brandfoundations.us.
Awesome. Thank you. So we were right before the break, we started talking a little bit about conscious capitalism and how you got involved, mm-hmm. right? But so what do you love about conscious capitalism? What has really drawn you to being part of that movement?
Yeah. So I had read the book, Conscious Capitalism, before joining the chapter in New York City. And conscious capitalism is really espouses a framework for how business can be a positive force in the world. There is really no greater organizing framework for humanity that we've seen other than free market capitalism. It has pulled billions of people out of poverty, improved the lives of countless billions of people, created tremendous wealth. There is simply no other force that has been able to do that over the course of history. But it has also come at a price. Largely due, and certainly since 1970 or so, and Milton Friedman wrote his piece about business having one purpose, which was to enrich the shareholder.
Right.
That as a result, we have seen some challenges in the environment, and use of resources, poverty, and discrepancies in terms of wealth. And those are real challenges. And so conscious capitalism espouses a way to sort of address that and to change that, and that capitalism needs to be part of the solution, but it has to change. When I step back and I look at the world today, I see we live in an era of a tremendous amount of distrust. We don't trust a lot of institutions that historically have helped us overcome the challenges that humanity has faced, whether that was religion or government or the media or higher education. Like, all of these things are distrusted at greater and greater degrees now. And that's a problem, because we have really big challenges we have to face and overcome. And so I think that's an opportunity for business to be part of the solution, and to harness its incredible ability to innovate and move humanity forward. But it has to change. It's got to do it in a different way. It can't do it in the way it has historically. And so conscious capitalism sort of espouses four tenets that businesses have to follow in order to do that. The first is that they have to have a higher purpose. There has to be a reason they're in business other than making money, non-profit. The second is that they have to have a conscious culture, a culture where all the people there are working there in support of this purpose, and are treated with dignity and respect, and are you know, considered family almost to a degree. There has to be, the third is a pillar is a conscious leadership structure, so a servant leadership mentality, that we're here to serve those in the culture and that purpose, not to enrich ourselves purely. And then the fourth, and probably the hardest, is a multi-stakeholder perspective. This is half. Model for how they operate that takes into account all of the interests, or the interests of all of their stakeholders, not just the shareholder, but partners and employees and their family members and the wider public and the environment, right? All of these are stakeholders that a business impacts. And so it's all about sort of developing. And then that's a hard one, because there's inevitably in business, we need to make money, we need to make profit in order to survive. There's a conscious capitalism sort of saying that profits are like blood cells or air. We need them in order to survive, but that's not what we live for, right? We live for this greater thing, to have experiences with people, or in the case of a business, there has to be a higher purpose, right? And so inevitably the stakeholder thing is where the rubber meets the road, right? I'm going to be pushed to have, there's going to be scenarios where I have to do something. There's going to be trade-offs, and most businesses will just sacrifice many of the stakeholders at the interest of a shareholder. And conscious businesses will dig a little deeper. They'll try a little harder to find that solution that will satisfy all of the stakeholders. And so that's kind of what I was drawn to it. I think we need it as humanity, right? In order to survive, we're going to need business to be more conscious. And I think it's a simple framework to understand and get your head around. And the data shows that companies that practice this are worth more, are higher performing, happier, more engaged. They keep their employees longer. They're more profitable. You know, on every metric, they do better. And so it's just a better way to do business.
Thanks for going over that. And Yeah, it's a better way to do business. And I think when you talked about it being, you know, this organizing force, one of the most important organizing forces in human history, right? Mm-hmm. That multi-stakeholder perspective alone, mm-hmm. I think is, you know, when you have to change, because to do that, as we know, you have to change your mindset. Yeah. You have to change your perspective, and you have to look at things completely differently. And that alone, right, shifts everything. Right. So when companies that you've interacted with, or you're aware of, or know about, what's the mindset they have that allows them to really honor multiple stakeholders?
Well, I think that they see the bigger picture. They have a more integral view of the world and the way business operates. They operate, they look at things through the lens of systems, and that mm-hmm. everything is interconnected. And ultimately, if I only, it's Raj Sisodia, who's one of the co-founders of Conscious Capitalism and is a professor mm-hmm. of marketing at a college up in Boston. He's often says, if you only focus on one stakeholder, it's like working out and only working on your biceps, you know, like you become malformed, right? It's just not right. A healthy kind of thing. You have to exercise all parts of the body and all parts of the business. And I think when you take a systems perspective and you look at it and you see how everything is interconnected, and conscious capitalism actually sort of walks you through a what they call a stakeholder mapping process or exercise, where you consciously sit down as a leadership team and think about who are all the stakeholders that we have, and how are they interconnected? And you know, if I change one thing here, how does it affect somebody else? It kind of drives you this systems level perspective. And once you see that, you understand that this stuff's all connected. And so you have to nurture them all equally. I think that's probably the number one thing, is that they step back and they take leaders in a conscious business take a wider view of these things.
And you start to see how one thing affects the other, right? One person affects the other one stakeholder.
All interconnected.
And it's not so siloed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. So is that something you, in Brand Foundations, or, you know, as part of that work, are you talking about, you know, brand from a conscious capitalism perspective?
I was drawn to it also because being involved in the chapter, obviously this is, you know, you want to give back, you want to do something, but you also want to do it in a way that's in alignment with your business. And so the conscious capitalism framework is very much in alignment with, mm-hmm. you know, the work that we do at Brand Foundations, this idea of building vibrant brand and culture narratives that tie these mm-hmm. companies together and make them healthier and happier, you know, is one small part of that conscious capitalism effort, right? That we help these companies find their higher purpose, you know, build it into the culture and have it reflected in the culture. It's certainly in alignment with it, and it's something that we socialize. And I think, you know, it helps to build our brand, certainly. And I also like to host the events. I mean, I had one this week where I sat down and did a fireside chat with the CEO of City Winery in New York, and we talked about his philosophy of what they call selfish philanthropy. They're an event and wine venue, and they're actually a winery in New York City, and they but they do a tremendous amount of benefit concerts and you know, take what their business is all about, which is entertaining and providing great experiences for people around food and wine and ambiance and music. And they do that with an eye towards the charitable part of it. And, you know, the idea that you can do what's right and selfish for the business, but also it has this greater impact, right? It has this bigger help for the world. And that's the idea. That's the ideal. When you can really bring those two together, that's the difference between, you know, a real truly integrated purpose, being a conscious business, and just, you know, doing some CSR program because you want to give away to charity. It's about really finding them integrated and linked and being passionate about it. So,
yeah. And that's where we see, you know, what I would call the magic happen, right? Where things get created, things get innovated that, you know, no one has thought of before. In quite that way. So that is a really great, it's a great example to wrap our show up on, you know. And JP, I want to thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Yeah, and sharing your insights, your wisdom, your creativity, and, you know, everything that you've been creating in the world. Do you want to share your website one more time, please?
Sure. Yeah, it's www.brandfoundations.us.
Awesome. Brandfoundations.us. And thank you, listeners. As always, we had a great time. Appreciate you tuning in and sharing this experience with us. Please join me the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. We'll be back here in a couple of weeks. See you then.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.